This is the Rise Up Sea Red podcast, all about the Arizona Cardinals and the NFL, featuring insider and outsider perspectives. Enjoy the best hour of Cardinals talk on the web. Now here are your hosts, Jess Root and Seth Cox.
Welcome, Arizona Cardinals fans, to the latest edition of the Rise Up Sea Red podcast, the best hour of Cardinals talk on the web. I'm your host, Jess Root, from CardsWire.com, part of the USA Today family of sites. My co-host is Seth Cox from RevengeOfTheBirds.com. He joins us, and we've got two games under our belts, but do we really know? It almost feels like we still don't know a ton about what the Cardinals are yet. Maybe, but maybe not.
I think what we know about the Cardinals is that they have some top-end talent, and then there's a whole lot of question. And so, from the good perspective, they're actually pretty good. They may not be good in enough key places to be playoff good. But they're good enough in, enough places to be average good. And so that riddle explains what we've learned in the first two games of the preseason, which is basically like, I'm not sure if we've learned anything yet because there's so many key players that are just missing so much time.
Exactly right. And that's what we're going to talk about tonight. The Cardinals got a 20-15 win over the New Orleans Saints on the road. Friday night in a weird Friday night game. The Cardinals typically don't play Friday night preseason games, and so it was odd for the schedule, but they did. They went into New Orleans. They got a win in the preseason, which is winning in New Orleans isn't easy anytime. So they got that. Some players stood out. We're going to talk about tonight the recording again on a Tuesday night as normal. The positives and the negatives, but just as a team focus, what were the good takeaways and bad takeaways we had. As we look forward, as we look at the roster we're going to talk about as well, which players have helped themselves on the depth chart and for the roster? Which players are losing ground, some of them because of unavailability and some of them because of play? We're going to look at those position battles and where we think they stand right now. And finally, we will look at what's in store for Game 3 as they play on Sunday night. So what we like to call the dress rehearsal for the regular season, Sunday night on national television on the road against the Dallas Cowboys, which if it weren't for what appears to be a Dallas team that, because they've got a lot of continuity, they might be resting guys. So David Johnson versus Ezekiel Elliott probably is not going to happen again. But let's go ahead and get started with the overall team positives and the team negatives. So we already sort of mentioned the fact that, well, we're not exactly sure but what we have with the Cardinals, but there are some positives and clearly there are some concerns. Let's start with some of the good things, and I want to point out number one, even though, and this is there's the caveat of, hey, we understand that Phillip Rivers didn't play. We understand that Drew Brees didn't play. But the fact that the Cardinals' defense has forced 8 turnovers in 2 games is a positive sign, especially with the track record Steve Wilks has on the defensive staffs that he's been a part of. Those defenses are physical and take the ball away. Obviously, you cannot expect them to maintain or to sustain a 4 turnover a game rate. But it does give you some optimism to see what is potentially to come.
Yeah, and it's fun because they're doing it not at full strength. So that is one of the positives. I mean, even in the New Orleans game, they were without Corey Peters on the first series. After the very first play of the game, Peters had to leave with some cramping issues. Then they cause a turnover. And then on the next series, they lose Robert Kimdiche to a foot issue that's likely going to keep him out the rest of the preseason. And they force another turnover. And, oh, by the way, they're doing it without 2/3 of their starting linebacking crew as well. So, you know, it's not just the injuries that happened in the game, but they're literally down 2/3 of their starting linebackers. And so, you know, what we said from the beginning is this team, oh, and, you know, they're still missing Marcus Golden. I mean, Marcus Golden hasn't even stepped on the field yet this year in a football capacity. And so when you look at it, they're still getting – they're generating pressure without basically three starters of their front seven. And then in this game, they were down 4 starters of their front seven. And they were still creating pressure, causing turnovers, like you said. I think a lot of that comes back to the fact that this – the strength of this team lies in the secondary right now on defense. You have 3 talented safeties, and you have, in turn, you know, 3 talented cornerbacks, and it's just allowed this team to be very versatile defensively and do some things while they kind of work through their issues. Now, in the same token, there were some definite concerns with the first team offense, or sorry, defense, excuse me, on the New Orleans Saints' first 2 series, where they were allowing roughly, you know, 12 yards a carry to the Saints' starting unit minus Drew Brees. And so that, I would say, was a bit of an eye-opener after we saw, like you said, a very physical, a very fast defense against the Chargers. This week, they let the Saints dictate the pace of the game and dictate the physicality. And I thought you saw that on those first 2 drives. But like you said, it's bend but don't break. And honestly, it wasn't even a bend because they forced a turnover and kept the Saints, you know, starting offense to 0 points.
Right. And obviously that was a bit of a concern to me. And then Steve Wilks said there were some gap integrity problems. This is going to be a thing that's going to be something to watch as the Cardinals get used to this new defensive scheme. It's they have one assignment. And so if there's a player who sees something that they want to do out of assignment, it could cause problems. We saw in the first couple of runs where it looked like the linebackers were just running into a pile of blockers, and then the running back would come out the back end. And again, but they were without Josh Bynes. They were without Dale Buchanan. And so they were running out there with Scooby Wright and Gerald Hodges and Hassan Reddick. Reddick did make the play with the interception. Hodges looked pretty good, and he's a serviceable player. Scooby Wright, we know what to think of him as a player. He's exciting. He's fun to watch on special teams. But there are physical limitations to him being able to play play defense in the league. The instincts don't make up for the lack of speed. So then, I mean, then as well, you had Corey Peters leave the game briefly with an injury, and Robert Kimdichie as well. And so there were some depth problems. And so basically there's concern. If they are not on top of their assignments, maybe they can be out physicaled. Maybe if they're not at full strength, because Steve Wilks talks about how the one thing that's the most demoralizing to a defense is running the ball successfully. And what I see from the Saints, now granted, the Saints were the number one rushing team a year ago. But this was a team that didn't have Drew Brees. It didn't have Alvin Kamara out there. So it was just Mark Ingram, and Mark Ingram's pretty good, but you hate to see them get manhandled the way they did, at least those first couple of drives.
Yeah, and it was just one of those things where you kind of hit on it. They're learning, but there's also there's a lack of talent and a lack of continuity right now that really factors into that linebacking unit. And, you know, Jess and I we're Cardinals fans, so there will be times that things sound homerish, but this is really not one of those times. I mean, this is legitimately an excuse for the play at this point. Is it's there's no cohesion right now. You know, that have we even seen the projected starting front seven together? Even if we take Marcus Golden out of it, I mean, we've only seen them together for what, maybe four practices before Daniel Buchanan got, you know, his knee banged up. It's just not been something that we've seen a lot of right now. And that is like an offensive line, you know, a defensive front seven that's changing schemes. They need work and they need the opportunity to learn each other's tendencies and how they've read and react to things. And that's just not happening right now. So, you know, if it carries over into the regular season, I'm not going to be surprised because there's basically been no practice time with this. It's more if it's still a problem after week seven or week eight, that's when you go, okay, maybe there is an issue. But I don't see any way that this is going to get rectified because you're not going to have the personnel out there to get it fixed right now.
And then another thing that here's something that I was, and it's one of the things that you noted on Twitter during the game is, wow, when the Cardinals opened up the offense and let, you know, both Sam Bradford and Josh Rosen throw the football, that was fun to watch because you were getting positive contributions from guys like Christian Kirk, from Chad Williams, who suddenly looked like the type of receiver that people talked about he could be, you know, a stiff arm and, you know, runs after the catch, things like that. But after running the ball wasn't successful overall, that Mike McCoy offense looked like it could be a little bit of that with Bradford, that they could move the ball.
Yeah, they can move the ball. And it was, you know, you and I talked about it a little bit off the air. That first game was, as much good as it did, it probably was the worst thing to happen to them because it gave this false idea of like, oh, this power football thing is absolutely 100% clicking already. Let's just do it again. And then they went out the first two drives and they handed the ball off a lot or, you know, even ran a screen or and stuff to David Johnson. And they gained probably what, six total yards of offense. And you're just like, oh, that did not work out at all. And, you know, when that happened, it really forced the Cardinals and Mike McCoy to go, okay, let's show just a glimpse of what this offense can do. And you, like you said, it opened up and all of a sudden now you have Chad Williams making a catch and run. And he looks like that physical presence with a little bit of explosiveness after the catch that we've talked about before. And all of that showed up, and then you still have David. Oh, by the way, we still have David Johnson, who we can hand the ball off to. Like, it was nice to see a little more diversity of the offense. Like you said, they opened it up a little bit. Sam Bradford's accuracy is, you know, everything it's been talked about. I mean, if he plays 16 games, I have a really hard time seeing him not completing close to 70% of his passes. Like, I'm willing to say that he's going to complete, you know, over 68% of his passes on the season if he plays consistently without any injury issues. And
that's going to be exciting to see simply because, hey, and we know that Brent, like, everyone talks about it ad nauseum. Bradford accurate back, but dadgummit, he's so accurate. He's still the ball. He has no incompletions in the preseason so far through two games. Obviously, that won't continue. He will misfire on a pass here or there, or a receiver will drop it. But the way he runs an offense, the type of throws that he makes, and the scheme that Mike McCoy has, it makes it very easy for them to stay, at least in the passing game, stay on schedule because they don't have to do chunk plays. They can do short passes and then use those short and intermediate passes to get longer plays because they're running after the catch. It's a perfect match for, for Mike McCoy, I think, to have Sam Bradford.
Yeah, it really is. And I, again, it goes back to something we talked about. The offense or for the Cardinals or the personnel for the Cardinals, it was really always an issue with Bruce Arians. And it was because, you know, they catered their draft choices to what Arians wanted. We talked about that so much over the 5 years that Arians was here. You know, this, he's going to draft a guy that's sub 6 foot that runs in, you know, less than a 4.42 40. Like those are the guys he's going to draft. And that's what he did. And, you know, for every T.Y. Hilton or Antonio Brown, there's a John Brown and a J.J. Nelson, where they don't have the refinement or the game of being able to be guys that get the ball short and make yards after the catch, and they're guys that take the top of the defense. That wasn't their game, and it never came to fruition in that way. And so now you have Chad Williams, who's a yak guy. I mean, he's going to catch the ball down the field too, but his strength is catching the ball short, you know, in that 6 to 8 yard range, and then turning it into a 15, 16 yard gain. You know, obviously that's been Larry Fitzgerald's game for the last 5 seasons under Arians. He was the one guy that they did that with. And so now, you know, you add in Christian Kirk, who's a yak guy. You add in a guy like Bryce Butler, who we haven't seen, who is now more of that Michael Floyd type. So you have three guys that are more short, and then you have a big body kind of jump ball guy versus the last offense was kind of the opposite. You had three guys on the field that were all trying to get 15 plus yards down the field. And, oh, by the way, you have Larry Fitzgerald short. So it's going to be interesting to see how that plays out, obviously, in the regular season, and hopefully the continued growth of Williams and Kirk. But it was a lot of fun to watch, because you saw, just like we said, glimpses of it and what it could be.
My other positive was overall, the aside from those first couple of drives, the fact that the offensive line, both the first team and the second team, improved. I mean, especially the second team, they looked cohesive, whether it was simply getting Evan Bame at center or just really focusing on what their mistakes were from the first game. We know that there are issues with depth on the offensive line, which is why it was good to see them be solid. And that's really kind of the last positive for me.
I just want to go back to the secondary. I mean, we talked about it a little bit, but I thought the work of the secondary is just, it continues to be outstanding early in the Wilkes era. And that's just one of those things, like, he prides himself on, you know, giving guys an opportunity to be great. And so far he's done that, and guys have responded. And so, you know, we've talked about Jamal Taylor. We've talked about, you know, Ben Wickery. We've talked about, obviously, Patrick Peterson, Buda Baker, Trey Boston. Like, all these guys continue to look really good in this new defensive scheme, almost like there's not a learning curve for them. And so that's one of those things where, again, I think the strength of this defense moving into the season is going to be the Cardinals secondary, and that's okay. You can have the secondary be your strength if it's as good as it looks right now. And if that happens, I think they're in a good spot, you know, heading into the regular season, at least early, where we just talked about, there are going to be some struggles in that front seven. If you have a back end of a defense, you know, your back four or five, depending on the defensive scheme that you're using, that's, you know, comfortable together, I think that's going to be important.
And with wrap up this segment of the Rise Up Sea Red podcast, the best Cardinals talk on the best hour of Cardinals talk on the web. And when we come back, we're going to talk about specifically, we're going to talk about the players who helped themselves, and maybe we'll get into the next segment as well as the players that are losing ground for whatever reason that is. So that's coming up next on the Rise Up Sea Red podcast. I'd like to remind you of our friends over at Harrys.com, as I do every week, tell you about the great value and the great quality that are Harry's razors. I told you I made the switch. It's been almost a year. I love the shave. I love the quality of the shave. I love the foaming shave gel, the smell, the quality of the blades. I don't shave every day. I don't need to shave every day. I shave a couple times a week. They last me, and they're so much better than the disposable razors, and they're so much less expensive than the big names. And we understand that it's sometimes hard to make the switch. So Harry stands behind the quality of their blades and has a trial offer for you. Claim yours by going to harrys.com/cred. You've got high quality blades at a factory that's been making them for over 95 years. They sell them directly to you over the internet, $2 a blade instead of $4. And there's a $13 trial value set that you get for absolutely free as part of our listeners. It comes with the handle. It comes with the 5-blade razor with lubricating strip and trimmer blade. Super great quality. Comes with the shave gel and a travel blade cover. That shave gel smells fantastic. Feels good on your face. And you can redeem that trial set at no cost at harrys.com/cred. Test it out. You'll love it. If you're like me, you'll keep going. So make sure to go to harrys.com/cred to redeem your offer, and I'll let you know and let them know that I sent you to help support the show. We're back on the Rise Up Sea Red podcast, the best hour of Cardinals talk on the web. We're going to talk about not so much the positive negatives from the team. We're going to talk about some players who helped themselves. There were a few players who notably improved their chances at either playing time and getting into the rotation, at least to being on more than just being on the team, but making contributions during the season, and others helped themselves to make the roster. A guy that I've kind of been focused on right now, it's kind of my thing, maybe I'm a little bit hyper-focused on, it's Evan Bame. Evan Bame at center. We finally saw him at center, and he was fine. And it was as playing as the center for the first time, is really since a few snaps in the preseason a year or two ago. In fact, in his rookie year, that was about it. We saw him playing, get some snaps at center then as a rookie. He managed to run that second team line well. The line played well. He played well. There were no glaring mistakes at all, which was a big improvement over the previous week to Daniel Munier. He seems to have his confidence back. And I think he took a big step toward locking a spot on the roster. I'm not going to say it's locked yet, because it's still very, very possible that their backup center isn't on the roster right now. But when I put together my roster prediction after that second preseason game, he did well enough to make me think, okay, he's got a spot on this roster.
Yeah. And it was one of those things that we talked about from the beginning of the AQ Shipley injury, was this was the kind of way that Evan Bame could backdoor his way into the roster. And then that first game, he got zero snaps, and some guy last name Pike, I don't even know his first name, was, you know, got the kind of third string snaps, and Bame was, I mean, let's be honest, he was not good as a guard, and it showed. And then from there, you know, it was like, we came out of game one and we were saying, this is a guy that's probably not going to make the roster. And then on Tuesday, you know, we got the text, and you know, you and I talked about it on the show a little bit. We got the text, hey, he finally got some snaps on a Tuesday. First time playing center under this new regime. And then he was the guy, the second team center Despite what the depth chart says, he was the second team center in the game against the Saints. And like you said, he nailed it, and he nailed his audition to the point where you saying, okay, maybe this guy is making the roster, because that was a better performance than what we've seen before. I thought it was probably his best game as an Arizona Cardinal. And so even though, you know, as you wrote today, Steve Wilks only talks about Bane's versatility and not really his ability. I think you could kind of put that versatility on the back burner a little bit and just know that, okay, well, he's an option to play guard or center, but really he's the backup center. And that's okay. I mean, it's okay if you have a guy that's kind of one note only in that position. It's not the worst thing in the world. You know, and so the question is, you know, does that push a Josh Allen off the lineup and things of that nature? For my guy, I think the guy that really stood out to me, and I talked about him a little bit, but Chad Williams, I thought he showed what they drafted him for, and that was to be a very active, very violent receiver near the line of scrimmage, a guy that can take, you know, a 2-yard pass and turn it into a 15-yard, 16-yard gain. And it was what he did in that game. And, you know, right now that's where he's most comfortable. That's what he did at Grambling. That's, you know, that's kind of who he was as a receiver coming out. And now he's getting to do that for Arizona, and he's doing it well. And so, you know, a lot of times I think coaches and teams work too hard to make a player into something that they're not, instead of just letting the player be who they are and then see if they can grow more from that perspective. And so kudos to McCoy and the offensive staff for getting Chad Williams kind of into that position and allowing him to be himself.
And another young receiver who took a big step forward was Christian Kirk. The buzz around Christian Kirk was not that he would be, now people hoped that he would be an instant contributor on offense in year one, but the way the depth chart was looking and just kind of the things were playing out early in camp and some whispers from people around the organization was he'll be in the mix, but mostly his impact will be on special teams. And I almost wrote the piece that I thought that he was going to be this year's version of Buda Baker, second round pick. Has enough players in front of him that's going to keep him off of the field for his natural position, but that he would make an impact on special teams. Now, we know he's going to be the punt returner. He might, like, with his play, not just the numbers, 4 catches for, was it 49 yards, led the team in both catches and receptions. He had the touchdown catch. It was the way he was doing it. He was catching the ball in traffic. He was going up and getting the ball. And all of a sudden, you're like, wait a minute. He's making a little bit of noise. Maybe he and Chad Williams could end up being that number 2 and number 3 receiver behind Larry Fitzgerald, giving them honestly a very physical receiving core between the three of them, because Fitz is physical, Chad Williams is physical. Like, Chad Williams has the talent to do kind of all of it. And then Christian Kirk as well, if he can do again what he did last week, it's going to be hard to keep him off the field offensively. And that's what he's expected. He himself is expected to be a contributor, had been a primary contributor this year. It's just, I tempered my expectations based on what it is to be a rookie in the NFL on a receiver, based on the fact that the volume that Larry Fitzgerald and David Johnson are get, but maybe Chad Williams, that maybe Christian Kirk is going to be a significant contributor in year one, which I didn't believe was going to happen other than on special teams.
Well, and when you watch him play, his game is very conducive to being successful early, because it allow it, again, it's kind of like what Chad Williams is doing right now. It's short. It's not complex routes. Yeah. He caught that, you know, kind of deeper pass on the touchdown from Josh Rosen, but you know, that was still that was a post route. It was a really well run, try to say that again, post route. And he, but I mean, the separation was minimal at best on it, and Josh Rosen just put a great ball on there. And so when you look at it, this is a guy that, like you said, he can maybe have some success early. And if his season is, you know, he's a 4-catch, 50-yard-a-game guy, I don't think anybody's really going to complain about that. I mean, from there, you're talking a guy that's getting, you know, 50 or 60 catches.
800 yards. That's
yards. And that's even good. Even if you're talking about, you know, 6 touchdowns, that's a nice season as a rookie second-round pick.
Well, and then if you look at kind of the receiving stats that the Cardinals have had the last couple of years, it's really kind of absurd because you got Larry Fitzgerald and then crickets. As much as – just think about this. The two leading receivers after Larry Fitzgerald last year were Jermaine Gresham, who basically – like if you listen to many Cardinals fans, he's a guy everyone wants to replace. And then Andre Ellington, who was cut a month and a half, who was cut a month before the season ended. They had the second most, they had the second and the third most receptions on the team. Crazy. And then if you go to the year before, I mean, you look at the offense is going to be Larry Fitzgerald and David Johnson. And so they need decent production. I mean, imagine if somebody could have gotten 800 yards receiving a year ago, just how different the offensive would have been. But I'm very impressed with, I was very impressed with what they did with their opportunity. I'm going to say that the players who also helped themselves are, of course, they didn't really need much help, but Sam Bradford just gave us a little bit of juice just to think, oh, okay, this is going to be fun to watch him. And then of course, Josh Rosen gave us even more to be excited about. It wasn't perfect. It wasn't. He probably could have gotten flagged for intentional grounding. He got caught with the delay of game, with the lack of he didn't get the communication, get the call, made the line of scrimmage right. He maybe fumbled a football, and you know, but he had poise when he dropped back to pass. He threw absolute darts. And the offense moved. And even with it adversity, because, you know, something that we saw the Cardinals struggle with the last couple of years is they get in the red zone or inside the 10 and then penalties and then they come with only 3. They overcame in that drive a false start penalty and a delay of game penalty. And Rosen found Christian Kirk in the end zone for the touchdown. And so they overcame that, which was a very good thing. And anyone else for you that really sort of helped themselves?
I don't know who helped themselves, but I do want to reiterate something you and I talked about a little bit last week, and that is I don't envy the staff and the management for having to make cuts this year, because the place that you continue to see it is the secondary. Dietrich Nichols, Rudy Ford, heck, even Tim Scott, who they just brought in off the street, all had really nice games. And in a secondary where you know your top 7 probably, there's not much room to get in. And so I, you know, we think this every year, but I truly believe this year that a guy that can contribute to an NFL team is going to get cut from this secondary. And it's not because the Cardinals are going to make the wrong call or anything like that. It's just because they have a lot of talent.
They do. You look at B'nai Ben-Wickery again, big making plays. I don't know how close he is to pushing Jamar Taylor for that starting job, but it at least gives you confidence that like he's making strides. So I don't know how much he's going to play, but he's helping himself, and it gives you just a little more comfort and relief knowing that there's not going to be, like, Jamar Taylor has been solid, but if something happens for some reason to Patrick or to Jamar Taylor, that if you ended up with a Patrick Ben-Wickery or a Jamar Taylor Ben-Wickery pair of corners, you're not going to be an abomination, which is wonderful. I mean, that's the thing with most teams. If you get down to that third corner as having to start, you're usually in trouble. And it doesn't look like they might be in trouble.
Right. And more than that, it looks like they have hard decisions to make, because it's almost to the point where you're like, as good as Buda Baker is, and, you know, I don't want anybody taking this the wrong way, but the way Ben Wickery is playing, you almost wonder if you really want to take him off the field or let him be the slot corner and him and Buda kind of play games similar to what Matthew and Baker did last year. So, you know, and it's nice to see. It's nice to watch. You know, it's one of those fun, enjoyable parts of everything. So, it's been really fun to watch, and I am pleasantly surprised at how deep and talented this group of in the secondary seems to be.
For me, there were two other players that they're kind of understated made steps in the right direction. One would be Jaquiz Smith, one of the veteran defensive ends the Cardinals picked up. He showed some good pass rushing. He rushed the pass really well. He's playing some special teams, and it looks like right now he's ahead of Arthur Motes. I know on the depth chart they play on different sides of the football. Smith has been more of the Chandler Jones side over left tackle, while Motes has been behind Mayoa and Vontaris Dora, who play over right tackle. But for me, it looked like Smith took a step forward, kind of separating himself a little bit. I think that Olson Pierre, we know what he is. I mean, people forget he was the team's second best sack. He was the second highest producer in sacks a year ago. But I think he's still showing that he's going the right direction. And then a very small thing is when I was watching late in the game, is to see Greg Little playing special teams. I think Greg Little, I mean, he didn't do it. He had the 6-yard catch or something. But the fact that he was playing special teams late in the game was a move in the right direction for him, because if he can play on special teams, I wrote something based on some comments that he made, and he's never been really a special teams player. His greatest value is as a receiver. So unless he can be a top three receiver on this team, it would be really hard to keep him. If he's going to play special teams, he can be a number five receiver on this team, and I wouldn't have any problem with that. And then J.J. Nelson, I think, made steps in the right direction. I don't think it's going to be enough, but you see with that pass interference play that he drew, if he can do something, he'll be able to do that. The problem is he doesn't play anything on special teams. He's a backup returner, but his frame doesn't allow him to do anything physically outside of plate receiver, which will make it hard for him to stay on the roster. But I thought those guys all took steps in the right direction.
Yeah, and you mentioned Greg Little. It's something else you and I talked about off the show, and we're getting to that point. So, you know, we can talk about it a little bit when you talk about the opposite side of that, and that's guys that maybe hurt themselves or haven't shown up. And the first one that comes to mind, and somebody you and I have talked about quite a bit, is Bryce Butler. And it's the fact that Butler, one of his positives coming into this season was that he was a veteran. That outside of Larry Fitzgerald, you really have nothing in terms of known commodity talent, as well as you have no veteran. I mean, there's no other veteran on the roster. Again, maybe if you want to call J.J. Nelson a veteran, I feel like that's pushing the term a little bit.
Even Greg Little, he's old, but he hasn't played since 2014, so it's not right. Like he has 3 years experience, maybe, so he has
about the same amount,
4 years credited. Yeah.
And so that's the thing. But when you look at it, you know, Butler's got to be out there at some point, and it's something that we've talked about with him, is that he's never performed better than, you know, a wide receiver 4. And I think that might be being gracious. And so that's what the question becomes, is missing games going to hurt him so much?
And yeah, for me, Butler, and it's not going to get any better because it seems doubtful he's going to play this week, which means are they going to stick him out there with the third and fourth stringers and the rookies and the second-year players in the preseason game four? Because he's going to make the roster. I think he's a lock, but for a guy who many believe would be their number two receiver, he's probably, as of right now, going to be the number four receiver because of what Christian Kirk and Chad Williams are now doing. And he's going to, it looks like that if things keep going in this direction, he's going to have the exact sort of season he has had since high school, which is, he's a guy on a roster. He's got some value, but it's nothing special. For me, the next guy that, and again, this is not hurting his chance at the roster, but Robert Kimdichie getting hurt was, for me, when I heard it, because I wasn't watching the game at the time, but when I heard it on the radio, so I was driving my son's football game on Friday. When I heard he got hurt, I'm like, no, not again, because this has been every preseason is he shows promise on the offseason. And he looks like he's right on the precipice, and some lower body injury happens, and it sets him back. I'm hoping his maturity and his work ethic are such that this is just one of those little training camp injuries that happens. But the fact that it keeps happening to him, and every other time he's had an injury, he comes back and he's not as good. It's like he takes two steps back, and then has to find himself again. And maybe this year it's different because he will be given the snaps to do it, because in years past, the defensive line was so deep, they just couldn't afford to put him out there and get his feet back under him when you had guys like Frosty Rucker, Olson Pierre performing. But that hurts him because and for me, he's the guy I want so badly to be so good this year because he's so talented. He's got the talent to be, you know, an Aaron Donald type player, in my opinion.
Yeah, and even if he's not that great, he could be, you know, even if he's more in the mold of like a Geno Atkins or something of that nature, you know, that would be a huge, huge boost to the Cardinals defensively. Even if he's a Quan Short level type of player. So when you look at this, it's becoming typical, and you know, it's not something you want to see. Third preseason and training camp, third time that this has become a bugaboo for him. Another guy for me that's, you know, you don't know what to make. You don't know what his ability really is right now. And that continues to be Brandon Williams, who's just kind of an enigma, because as you point out in your weekly articles, the Cardinals continue to utilize him on basically every special teams except field goal unit. So every kickoff, punt, he's on. And on the flip side, his playing time as a defender
is dwindling.
Yeah, it's getting back to, you know, Brandon Williams is turning back. It's reminiscent of what we've seen with Justin Bethel in previous years.
And he's not even making a huge, he's such a, I can't tell if he's a core special teamer or if that's just where they have him right now. But when you see a guy like Dietrich Nichols and his special team snaps go up, or you see a Zeke Turner who's playing all over on special teams, and you're like, oh, they're going to keep one of those guys. And to me, it feels like that the three players of Williams and of Nichols and Turner are really – almost, maybe A.J. Howard to some extent, those four guys are battling for basically two defensive back spots. Yeah, and for me, that kind of covers the players who kind of lost. Oh, there one other player and a minor, and that's Mike Glennon. I don't know how much.
What's going on with him?
Like, it doesn't sound like he's going to play this week, which means is he even going to play in the fourth game? And if that's the case, is he really a lock for the roster? Is he Drew Stanton? And is it because that Sam Bradford has that history and you are that close to having Josh Rosen as your starter? Is he a lock for the roster? But is in any case, it's making fans wonder, well, couldn't we just keep Knopf? Or after all, he's got that effort. Like like a certain writer talked about, he's got that attention and that laser focus and that exuberance. But if he's going to be what we have always thought, he's probably going to be the new Drew Stanton, and he could potentially be on this team for 4 or 5 years. You don't want to see him not play at all because he's going to need reps. And the one time he played was bad.
Right. It was awful. And, you know, that's the problem is you're looking at this third quarterback position in a different way than you normally would. And it's not to say because you want a guy to play. It's to say more to the fact that there is a large potential that a guy like Sam Bradford isn't able to play a whole season, whether it's a game or two or, you know, a large amount of games after playing some games. So you're looking at this QB3 really as your de facto QB2 when things go wrong, Bradford. And so, you know, you want that guy, no matter how much of a quote-unquote veteran he is, you want that guy to get reps, and that's just not happening at this point. And it's, like you said, it's kind of frustrating because Knopf is playing like a late round pick. So he's above an undrafted free agent, but he's still not playing like a guy that you necessarily want to keep as a roster spot. But the alternative of going into the season with only two QBs on the roster, I think would be irresponsible. So, right. So you know, come on, Mike Glennon, like, we're not asking you to win a starting position. We're just asking you to be a viable backup candidate.
So it's not a wasted roster spot, basically.
Right.
Especially when there's positions where you could keep, like at the defensive backfield, where you can keep somebody that's good.
Right.
And with that, we're going to wrap this section up, this segment of the Rise Up Sea Red podcast, the best hour of Cardinals talk on the web. And when we come back, we're going to talk about the last little bit. We're going to talk about the position battles, the key position battles. What do they look like right now? And then we're going to look ahead at preseason game three against the Cowboys. What can we learn? What do we want to see? That's coming up next on the Rise Up Sea Red podcast. We're back on the Rise Up Sea Red podcast, the best hour of Cardinals talk on the web. And as we get closer, what is it? We got a week and a half away from final cuts, and we kind of know a lot about the roster. There's some things we know a lot about the roster, but position battles, we've kind of addressed it at receiver. Do you think right now, as of right now, that if the season started today, that Chad Williams would be your wide receiver too? I'm not convinced yet. I think it'll take one more game. But I still think Butler is that number two, but I believe that it's Williams and Kirk who are now 3-4.
Yeah, and it looks like one of those situations where until Bryce Butler, for me, proves it on the field, I want to see a guy like Chad Williams out there more reps. I want to see a guy like Christian Kirk out there getting more reps. And so I'm kind of with you that, you know, maybe it's not to that point yet, but I, you know, after two preseason games, give me that Fitz Williams Kirk lineup over a Fitz Butler Williams lineup right now.
As we look at the defensive end position, for you, has anything changed at all
I thought you hit it on the head. Jacques Smith looks like the guy that's doing. Vontarius Dora continues to play well. You know, I don't. He's an undrafted free agent, though, man. Like, if the strength of your team is the defense, can you really be putting in that type of stuff? I don't know. So, you know, when you look at it, Arthur Motes hasn't done anything for me. When you look at it, a guy like, you know, a guy like Benson Mawaya hasn't really done much in the way of proving that you need to be a starter. So overall, I don't know where you're at on this personally, because I don't know where I'm at on it personally.
I think Mayowa has basically locked up that starter job, but Dora, I'm not sure where Smith comes in, because where he's played, he's gotten playing time behind Chandler Jones. So I don't know how much different it is to play the one side or the other, but if Marcus Golden doesn't start the year, and as of right now, my roster predictions, I have them keeping 5 defensive ends as opposed to 4, and it's because of the uncertainty of Marcus Golden. I don't know. It's just there's too much unknown with his return. And so I think you have to go with him plus 4 others. And right now I have Smith ahead of Motes, but I still have Mayowa and Dora ahead of Smith, because those are the guys that play on that other side. They're lining up over on the as left defensive end, over lining up over right tackle. What about the cornerback position? Where are you at? I think obviously both of us are pretty sure in the fact that Jamar Taylor is number 2. Do you think Ben Wicker is making that interesting? I'm not sure that's the case. I don't think that he's really pushing. He's making plays, Ben Wicker. I don't think he's pushing Taylor yet.
No, I don't think he is, and I don't think he really will, because I think Jamar Taylor's played extremely well, and I think he's a talented guy. And like I said, he's a guy that could potentially be long-term is probably not, you know, the right word.
At least more than 1 year.
Yeah, like a two-year fit opposite Patrick Peterson. And so I'm okay with where Taylor's at. I think when you watch Ben Wickery, he's just more comfortable in this defense. I mean, he is the guy that is 100% reacting the most, as opposed to, you know, the other guys where they're struggling a little bit. Not even struggling, but playing a little bit slower type stuff. And so when you look at it from that perspective, I think it just goes back to Ben Wickery's time with Wilkes and Holcomb in Carolina and his familiarity with his defense.
And then behind them, I think we can say that Chris Campbell's going to have a spot on the roster. He's played well enough, and they're very intrigued with his size and talent. And so do you think that Dietrich Nichols or Brandon Williams has the edge over there, at least for a roster spot?
See, and that's the hard part, because I think Nichols has played well. It's one of those situations. We talked about this last week, or no, maybe it was in our roster previews. I'm not sure. But we've talked about this instance, this potential of what happens if you get a guy like Dietrich Nichols or Chris Campbell that are not really options of getting much playing time this year, barring injury. Whereas, you know, maybe they're not going to be core special teamer over a Rudy Ford and a, you know, like you said, a Brandon Williams. Like how do you decide that? Because in my mind, Nichols has been leaps and bounds the, you know, if we're just stating full on corners, not the Buda Baker hybrid, but if we're just looking at it, I think Nichols has been the 4th best corner on this team after Taylor, Patrick Peterson, and Ben Wickery. So it's tough to kind of understand how he would get cut. But again, it's going to be a numbers game, and how many defensive backs do you keep, and can you keep a guy that is maybe, you know, he looks like the type that is in line to replace Ben Wickery, as opposed to type that is potentially to, you know, take over for Jamar Taylor, if that makes sense.
It does. It does. Now, as we look cornerback, defensive end, the other kind of positions. Now, there was a player that you felt that we needed to talk about in terms of, maybe we should have talked about on players who are helping themselves. But do you think, and I think you, Seth, tell us about what you think about the kicking situation.
So, I mean, when you watch Matthew McCrane, it's an easy, you know, we talked about this after the first game. It's just an easy, powerful leg. And it's one of those situations where, you know, has he done enough to win the position? Probably not. But has he done enough to show that he's not a liability or he's not going to hurt the team anyway? I think he has through two preseason games and what he's been asked to do. And so when you look at it from that perspective, the Phil Dawson thing is interesting because Dawson's a guy you have on your team when you're competing, right? Does that make sense? Like he's the guy you have on your team when you're competing for maybe not a playoff spot, but looking to go a guy that is going to be kicking in January for you. But in the same instance, is it better to be a year early on McCrane than a year late on him and possibly lose out on, you know, a guy like what happened with Cincinnati, who's now the Philly kicker, you know, type of situation where you cut a guy that goes on to be really good for the Super Bowl team. And, oh, by the way, now you need a new kicker too. So that's been my thing this whole time as far as the McCrane-Dawson thing goes. I didn't think that McCrane would flat out beat Dawson, but I did wonder if he would do enough to make it an actual competition.
And that's the thing for me, because at the start of training camp, Steve Wilks made it sound like that, you know, McCrane has a way to go. Well, we'll see if that still is the case, if that closed the door. What are you looking forward to as we come into preseason game three? Now, we're going to – this being the dress rehearsal, it sounds like, especially since it's the Cardinals' first year with Steve Wilks and Mike McCoy and Al Holcomb and all that, that they will treat this game the way it's traditionally done. So the starters will play significantly, and then it'll be the rest of your key contributors, your main backups. So pretty much guys that you figure will be on the roster. Obviously, David Johnson will still probably bow out early. So will Sam Bradford. So will Larry Fitzgerald. So we'll still see some first team reps, and we'll find out more. You know, by the time you guys hear this podcast, Steve Wilks probably would have explained a little bit more in his press conference with the media on Wednesday after practice. But it doesn't look like it's going to be the case for the Cowboys, as Jerry Jones came out and said that there is absolutely no reason for Ezekiel Elliott to play. We might not see Elliott. We know that the two of their interior line, the Travis Frederick and Zach Martin, are out and pushing to get ready for the regular season. So does that mean do they not even start Dak Prescott? Because the Cardinals already missed Phillip Rivers. They already missed Drew Brees. And as a result, they've defensively taken advantage and forced some turnovers. Are we going to end up looking at a team that has been tested but not really tested? And so we're going to look again in a week and say we still don't really know anything about the Cardinals.
I think so. I do. I think we're going to know more in the sense that they're going to play their starters a bit more. But again, no Deion Buchanan, no Josh Bynes, or maybe we see Josh Bynes this week, no Marcus Golden. It's not going to be a lot of guys out there that you expect to be competing. And then on the other side, like you said, no Zeke Elliott. How much Dak Prescott are you going to get? It's a question about, you know, facing top end talent. But on the flip side, you can only play the guys that are in front of you. So I think the biggest thing is, even with all of the players out for the Cowboys, you can still show that, okay, we're getting better against the run. We are you know, were able to again establish a dominant run game with our team this week. The Cowboys aren't exactly as talented as the Saints defensively, but so that begs that question of, can they, you know, reestablish a dominant run game early and then take, you know, and then allow a sprinkling in of Sam Bradford, and maybe not have to go full out, you know, 15 pass attempts in a game type Sam Bradford. So those are the questions I have this game. I'm going to really be watching the wide receivers again. Like you said, likely no Bryce Butler. So we'll see, you know, kind of how that plays out this week. We're going to have, to see if Chad Williams and Christian Kirk can carry over and maybe even grow on this situation. I don't know if they can, but and again, if they do, it's good. Like it's never a bad thing when players play well. But again, it's not like they're going up against the Eagles or the Saints or you know one of these top defensive teams. The Cowboys are a little bit undermanned right now and undergunned. Defensively, they're a better offensive team than defensive team. So that'll be the question for them this season. But for the Cardinals, they need to go out and establish that they are a really good team on the offensive side of the ball, in the sense that they can milk clock, have long drives, take up time, and then move forward from there.
And for me, the wide receiver room is something I want to watch too, because I want to see how things play out. Yes, can Christian Kirk and Chad Williams show consistency and performance and kind of stack games, as they like to say, like you want to stack practice. They can stack games, so consecutive good games, and see where that builds. The quarterback position is something I want to watch as well, because I want to see I want to see Sam Bradford move the ball, but I don't want to see him play too much. And I want to see more Josh Rosen. I want to see Josh Rosen play. I want to see him be protected. And I want to see if he can continue to look the part. He's looked rookie-ish, but he's looked at least the part to where, yeah, there's no doubt. This, for me, watching him play, I'm looking at him, there's no doubt that he can handle being a starting quarterback in the future. You know, you watch other young quarterbacks come into, and maybe not this year, but in years past, where you got a guy that, you know, you see these projects and you see glimpses of a throw or two. But with Rosen, it's almost every play, and the mistakes that he's making are typical mistakes. They're not abominations. They're normal rookie mistakes. And so my eyes, of course, are on Josh Rosen to continue to give Cardinals fans that optimism. Sam Bradford, of course, to give them hope for this season. And then I want to see them be more physical up front. We've seen the secondary play well, but I want to see, even if it's not Ezekiel Elliott, I want to see the Cardinals keep Dallas from just running them over. If you can be solid against the run, then I think we've met the goals that I have set for them right now. And obviously, I also want to see what happens at the back end of the receiver room. Do we see what do Greg Little and JJ Nelson, Trent Sherfield do? Are they going to do enough to make this roster? And there's always plays. Evan Bame, I've got my eyes on. Is he going to do well again? Corey Cunningham, their seventh round pick, is he going to do enough to crack a roster spot and to make them keep 9 or even 10 offensive linemen? So there's, you know, as long as the starters are out, I want to see positives. Even if they're not playing against all the Cowboys starters, anytime starters are on the field, I want them to look okay. Because if the starters look okay, it gives you hope for the season. But if the starters look not so good, that's not very hopeful as we look forward in, you know, 19 days or 18 days by the time you listen to this show or less.
Right. And I think, you know, we kind of hit on it, but I think what happened the first two drives on defense was a bit disconcerting. And so now you're saying, all right, like you said, let's get back to it. Even without Ezekiel Elliott and two of the best offensive linemen in the NFL, let's just get back to seeing a defense that can get stops and is not giving up. I think it was 6.7 yards per carry. The starting defense was giving up to the Saints, mostly starting offense. And so, again, I understand the starting linebackers are out, but I don't care if all three starting linebackers are out. You cannot give up nearly 7 yards per carry on the ground, because then teams will just dare you to stop the run and just keep running the ball. And then eventually they'll be able to, that'll open up the passing game. So that, like you said, that's going to be key this week to see how that works.
Perfect. And with that, we will wrap up this edition of the Rise Up Sea Red podcast. We'll be back in a week. There's not much to say before the final preseason game, so next week's show will be our 53-man roster prediction. We'll talk about what we saw during the game, and we will make our final roster predictions. So join us again in a week. That's Seth Cox. I'm Jess Root. This is the Rise Up Sea Red podcast. It's the best hour of Cardinals talk of the world. Thanks for listening.
Thanks for listening to the latest edition of the Rise Up Sea Red podcast. Listen to previous episodes and subscribe to the show on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher Radio, Audioboom, or many other podcast platforms, so shows are delivered directly to your mobile device. Please give the show a 5-star rating and always support the sponsors who support the show. We'll be back soon for the best hour of Cardinals talk on the web. Rise up, Red Sea, be Red Sea Red, and of course, Rise Up Sea Red.